away of jungle gyms and things like that in schools is terrible. And I think this happens because we also live in a society where people sue for everything. So your child climbs on a jungle gym at school and falls. Mm. And now the school is being reckless. But, you know, we climbed on jungle gyms and rode bicycles and things, sat on swings when we were kids. So a lot of the movement that kids used to have, they simply don't have anymore. We expect children to sit for hours and take in information, and there's no movement. And to learn anything effectively, you have to have a visual input through your eyes, ears, taste, tactile, whatever. You have to have movement and an emotional connection or limbic system activation. So now we're taking the movement away, but we're expecting kids to learn. And it's an impossible, it's a neurological impossibility. It's interesting because we develop in a very specific way. To achieve a learning brain, we have to have emotional intelligence. To achieve the state of emotional intelligence, we have to first start with the primordial brain, which is the oldest part of the brain, the first part of the brain to develop, which is where all your repetitive behaviors are, which is where your reflexes are. Because if you have a state where a child misses that and then there's an over-focus on emotional intelligence, then we have children who grow up emotionally intelligent, they are cognitively aware and they have thinking and reasoning processes, but they're in a constant fearful state. Mm. Or they have addictive behaviors, addictions, repetitive behaviors, compulsivities, impulsivities, impulse control problems, because the reflexive pattern repeats itself. And it's a very old analogy, but it rings true. To build a house, you have to have
foundation.
A strong foundation. Mm. So if we discover there are problems with the roof, which is now the learning brain, and the walls are the emotional intelligence, we still have to go down into the foundation and put the right foundation there, integrate the reflexes, so that information can come in without it being distorted. Does that make sense?
Makes a lot of sense, So have you got any kind of, you know, I know you've been, you know, working over many, many years.
Yeah.
But Yaron Bevi must be something that stood out to you in working with children, because the enthusiasm, the results that to get people excited, to get people to understand
the importance of reflexes.
Yes.
I can think of many examples, but one that always comes to mind is of a little boy in Zambia. I used to work quite a bit in Zambia. And I was there once, you know, not many specialists go to Zambia. So I did training for people in Lusaka. And I think it was on my second visit there, because I first wanted to
see what
this is all about. So the second time I went, the woman who arranged it, lovely, lovely lady, Farida Kapadia, said they've got this boy who was in a severe car accident when he was, I think he was 9 or 10.
Wow, that's quite young, eh?
Yes. Total paralysis. The parents had taken this child to India to specialists. They wanted to do the stem cell transplant. And so by the time I met him, he was 16.
Sure. So he'd been already, how many years is that? That's
5 or 6 years.
Yeah.
He was bedridden, apparently completely non-responsive.
That's devastating.
With cerebral damage, you know, classic, the arms turned in, couldn't speak or communicate, and his mother was saying that they have a live-in nurse, a live-in occupational therapist, and a live-in physiotherapist.
Sure.
Just to make sure that, you know, to mobilize him and everything. So they wanted me to go and look at this boy. And bear in mind that he's completely unresponsive. So, you know, things, times like that, you think, oh. And anyway, we went, and when I saw this child, he was 16, but he looked like he couldn't be older than 8 or 9. because he'd been in bed for so many years.
You mean his physical development was also...
Because he's not using his muscles. His muscles were completely atrophied. And he was lying on his side. His eyes were open, but he wasn't responsive. And something I noticed, that the moment we first stood at the door and I observed, his mother, the nurse, the occupational therapist, everybody that went into the room was shouting. Because they had because he's non-responsive, they had the idea that he's deaf, that he can't hear them.
Interesting. We do that. Isn't it weird?
Did you see someone in a wheelchair and you think they're deaf? And then you raise your voice to make sure that they hear you. And so I first did his brain profile to see how to communicate with him. And then I started checking his reflexes. And in his particular case, the Moro reflex, also the spinal galant reflex, and the ATNR reflex, the STNR reflex, the automatic gait reflex, all those reflexes were still active. So he was literally like a newborn with an incredibly increased muscle tone, which tells you that there's elevated anxiety. So I started working on his reflexes. His Moro reflex in particular was very, very active. He was in a constant state of fear.
Is that why you think the arms were like this?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. And obviously in a state of fear, you can't access auditorily. So we integrated all his reflexes. It was difficult, two people to manipulate his limbs and everything, but anyway, integrated his reflexes and did some brain gym, particular to auditory integration and visual integration. Lots of thinking caps that you could do for him, lots of lazy aids in his visual field, even that looked like his eyes weren't moving. Integrating the spinal galant reflex every day, two or three times a day. And I was in Zambia at that time. I think I was there for about 2 weeks. And I saw him on the second day that I was there. And on the fifth day, his mother actually came to the training and said, for the first time since he's been bedridden, when she walked into the room, he followed her with his eyes.
Oh, my word. That is so super exciting.
He had visual fixation.
Yes. That's why it looked like he couldn't follow.
Because they were... Exactly. Because he was locked in a state of fear. Now imagine you lying in a bed and you're a prisoner in your own body and everybody's shouting at you.
But isn't that shouting going to affect the auditory ability again?
So I just told the people, you know, speak to him normally. Because every time you come into the room, he's anticipating shouting.
So he will tense up?
Yes. So they can relax. And it was about 6 months after that, he was able to start to communicate and he was in a wheelchair. He was able to sit upright in a wheelchair. He had to relearn to speak.
Hmm.
Obviously, lots of brain gym. Lots of brain gym. Continue to work with his reflexes. And this was about 10 or 11 years ago. And he now walks with a Zimmer frame. There's obvious neurological damage due to the head trauma, but he's relearned to speak. From a boy who was lying in a bed.
What kind of quality of life is that?
They can't do anything for him. You know, he now moves independently with the Zimmer frame. And
he's able to communicate to some extent.
Exactly. It's life-changing. And it's just a different approach. But that truly is... you know, a miracle, being the right person at the right time for that child. And that's what just makes it all worthwhile.